Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging with us. I appreciate it. From the 1920s until the 1950s, real estate transactions in Baltimore County included covenants that contained clauses prohibiting the sale of homes to a, quote, Negro or someone of Negro extraction. Some of those deeds for homes in Stoneleigh, a bucolic neighborhood in Baltimore County near the county city line, still include such covenants. For the last couple of years, volunteers in that community have worked to remove them from the deeds of more than 500 homes. John Morgan is a freelance reporter based in Baltimore who has reported on this for our news partner, the Baltimore Banner, and he joins me in Studio A. It's good to see you, John.
Good to see you, Tom. Thanks.
And joining us as well is Bissett Schwanke, a real estate agent with Cummings & Company who has been active in efforts to change the deeds for the homes in Stoneleigh that still include these racist covenants. Bissett, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Tom. Happy to be here.
So, John, give us an overview. What are the covenants? What do they say? And who did they target?
Well, there are a variety of them, and researchers have been going after these around the country, and they're discovering that these were put in place by the encouragement of the federal government. In many cases, the Board of Realtors, the predecessor of the current Board of Realtors, had model language. And they are, as much as anything else, an explanation for why our cities are black and our suburbs are white. And the government's defense of this was, if we put this language into covenants in these new developments, they will be more valuable. Our investment, our taxpayers' investment, will be protected on some level. You'll see them. I talked to a researcher at the University of Minnesota who's led the charge of this. They're all over the state of Maryland. They're all over the country. Some of them prohibit the sale to black people. Some of them prohibit the sale to Asians. There's restrictions on Jews in many communities. So it's an ugly chapter in America's construction and home building.
Yeah, and, you know, redlining and these restrictive covenants, a lot of them did originate in Baltimore. Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, Roland Park, and some other, well-known neighborhoods kind of pioneered, you know, what was going on.
Developed by Meyerhoff, who himself was Jewish, and agreed to put restrictions on Jewish purchases of homes in his own development.
Yeah, and Schwanke, when did these start? I mean, as I understand it, in John's reporting, racist language and covenants are as early as 1850. In the early 1900s, I mean, about what's the time frame of these deeds in Stoneleigh? When are you discovering that they first had these racist covenants?
Well, Stoneleigh was developed in the early 1920s. So when those homes were built, these deeds were added to each of this restrictive language was added to each of the deeds as the homes were built in the community.
So when we're talking about these covenants, they go from the time that the house was built, right?
The developer that developed Stoneleigh split the property into separate parcels of land. Each piece of land had this covenant attached to the land, and it would run with the land.
But the Supreme Court said it was unenforceable in 1948, 1968. The Fair Housing Act said it's illegal to do this. How do they survive to this day? How are they still in place? I don't get that part.
Well, even though they're not legally binding, the language remains in the deed until someone removes the language.
Oh, okay. So it's there, but no one can enforce it. But the owner of the deed has to be the one to excise it from the deed. Is that how it works?
That's my understanding. John may know more.
It's a legal contract that the buyer has with the seller. I believe you can get it out when you go to sell your house. I think if you know it's there, you can get it taken out at that juncture. These property law in America is strict on this, that you have to adhere by covenants that are put in place, and this is a contract that's enforceable with the exception of these particular provisions.
And so what's involved, the process of getting rid of them, Bissett, is called discharging. So what did you and the other volunteers working in Stoneleigh have to do to get these deeds discharged?
Well, in our case, because the covenants run with each parcel and each home, each homeowner had to sign a request that was submitted to the county to have that language stricken. So our volunteers printed out all of the deeds for every home in the neighborhood and delivered copies of those to each home and asked the homeowners, everyone on the deed would have to sign that document and return it. We had a volunteer who accepted those and then took them to the county, and the county is going through the process of removing that language house per house through the community.
Because it's the county is the jurisdiction that has to register the deed, right? They have to hold the official record of it?
I assume so, county.
Yeah.
The register of deeds. I had to send mine back three times because it wasn't fully printed out. They're very particular about it. It has to be signed the same way the deed was signed.
Exactly. Your
so
name
your
has
middle
to
initials
be, right?
and all that kind of stuff. It's
very
not
particular.
It's not easy.
Yeah, it's a lot of paperwork and footwork.
Sure. And John, how is it that people like you can go to a real estate closing and sign all the documents and not be aware at the time that these restrictive deeds were part or restrictive covenants were part of your deed?
Well, they're often buried in the original deed from a seller who's long gone. And the deed that you're presented to at closing is oftentimes won't include all of the covenants and all of the sale records going back to the construction of your home, which mine is 100 years old. It'll often have language, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there'll be language saying that you will adhere to all the prior covenants, but those won't necessarily be enunciated there at the closing table.
Okay, so what's in a deed in the year 2000 or something isn't necessarily a complete record of what was in the deed 100 years earlier when the house was built.
But it remains part of the official record.
Yeah. I think it's all in there. You may not be presented with that entire document at the settlement table, but that document, your ownership will be added to the top of that deed as the next new owner. And then we're talking, these homes are over 100 years old, some older, and these deeds were handwritten. So I know when I bought my home in Stoneleigh in 1999, someone had actually gone through and drawn a line through all of that language in my deed. I think I was the third owner of that home. So I saw that stricken language in my settlement, but I don't believe it was legally stricken. I think someone was just offended by that language and removed it. I don't know if the title company.
Oh, really? So that's not enforceable by itself.
I don't believe so, because I went through the work on my own deed to sign and have that information removed. And like I said, they're handwritten. They're not easy to read all of the time because of the nature of the handwriting. And people at settlement are not going back and reading. Most people, I've had a handful of people who do, but most people do not read all of the documents at their settlement, especially a very long deed that's handwritten.
Yeah, years and years ago, I spoke with a woman, Clemmy Peterson, who passed away at the age of 102. And I remember when she was about 101, I asked her what were the most important things that had happened in her lifetime. And she said, oh, that's easy. There's two things, one good thing and one bad thing. I said, what's the good thing? And she said, the invention of the typewriter, because the deeds and the contracts and the bills of sale, the numbers were no longer, fudged and illegible, and people knew what the contract said, and people were up on that. And I asked her what the bad thing was. She said, giving women the vote.
Wow.
So that was her take on things.
That's interesting you say that, because my deed is handwritten, and it's kind of shocking that someone took the time to spell out that your house has to be so many feet from the road. I can't brew distilled alcohol on my property, and I can't sell to someone of Negro extraction. And it's so matter of fact, and that legalese language that someone took the time with meticulous handwriting, far better than mine, to lay that out. It's a picture of a time in our history that's can be kind of breathtaking.
John Morgan is a freelance reporter. He's written about racist covenants on deeds in homes in Stoneleigh and elsewhere here in Maryland and around the country for the Baltimore Banner. They're our news partner, of course. Bissett Schwanke is with us as well. She's a real estate agent who was active in the efforts to change these deeds in Stoneleigh, where she used to live. So if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a comment or question, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. And in your story, John, you mentioned that Governor Moore signed a law the 13th of May, a couple of months ago, having to do with housing and stuff? What did that law say? Why was it necessary?
There's been a couple of swings at this, trying to make this an easier process for people. Starting a few years ago when Rogers Forge did it, they were one of the first communities. But the law has been tweaked, and this most recent iteration makes it, do you recall some of the provisions? It takes effect in October, and the current law before it takes effect said that the county attorney in a community association can seek to have all of the deeds in a community altered and the language stricken. But one of the provisions of the law said they have to send a certified letter.
They notify each homeowner.
So the new law starting October 1st says a notice can be put in a newspaper, anyone knows what those still are.
Yeah, but so in other words, what folks are trying to do in the legislative end of things is make the discharging process easier.
Yes,
correct.
Rather than have to go with all these documents to each individual person. I mean, as you comb the neighborhood in Stoneleigh, I would imagine that a lot of people were surprised to find that these covenants actually existed on the properties that they may have lived in for quite some time.
Yes, I think people were surprised to see that dark bit of history, as John says.
So getting people to know about this is a big part of this, isn't it, John? People need to know that it's possible, and now perhaps they could look into their deeds and look into
I think Bissette and her neighbors deserve a lot of credit. They had a large committee put in place. They searched all of these deeds one by one. They printed them out. They printed out the form that needed to be signed. They even did it for the community pool, which turned out it had restrictive covenants associated with that piece of property. God bless them. And they're up to about 75% now of people who've gone along with it.
And you mentioned the Maryland legislature passing a law to make it easier to discharge these covenants. 22 states, according to your reporting, have done similar laws.
Yeah.
You talked to this person from the University of Minnesota. But this is a national problem. This is not something that's restricted to Maryland.
Absolutely. It was taking place across the country. Apparently on the West Coast, you see more Asian restrictions because there's more Asian immigration going on there. It's been going on around the country. Various cities have undertaken projects it's called Mapping Prejudice. Washington, D.C. did that. Tacoma Park in Maryland has been very active now, and they're undergoing a similar process of trying to map the deeds, find where those covenants exist, and then have them remedied. And they were active in getting this most recent legal change put in place.
We have an email from a listener who says, I've seen a neighborhood sign for Lock Raven Village in northeast Baltimore City that says the neighborhood is a, quote, covenant community. I've only heard of covenants as a means to limit who can live there, but I assume that's not what this means. Bissett, have you ever heard of the term covenant community? I mean, they're advertising this.
Yes, obviously we had some terrible covenants pertaining to people's race and national origin, but many covenants refer to basically similar to like a homeowners association, restricting the ability for people to run businesses off of their properties, or maybe put in a swimming pool or erect outbuildings, park campers in their driveway or boats, those types of things that would help, keep neighborhoods looking good and keep neighbors happy with each other and those types of restrictions, rather than restricting race and religion or national origin.
Because there are covenants, John, in various communities and neighborhoods around town, where you have to get the color of your house cleared,
right,
by in downtown Baltimore, it's CHAP, the Historical Architecture Preservation, the Committee for Historical and Architectural Preservation. But there are things like, you can only have a certain kind of roof on certain houses in certain neighborhoods. I mean, there are things about that.
Sure, right?
Still exist.
Yeah, right? I lived in Homeland for a while. We owned a home there, and you had to maintain the roof as slate. You had to use copper downspouts, which are very expensive. And they also had racist language in them, focused, I believe, on Jews. But it's worth pointing out, they had a homeowners association that was empowered to create and enforce covenants. So the board of that homeowners association was able to eliminate the racist covenants through the action of the board. Other communities like Stoneleigh are not able to do that because they just have a volunteer community association. And then there's a hybrid in Rogers Forge where the developer created 4 and 5 townhouses on tracts of land and then gave a community association a power to enforce that. So they were able to do it largely through the community association.
We have a good suggestion from a listener, Carol, who says we should read the book Not in My Neighborhood. That's by Antonio Pietola.
Yeah, old colleague of mine. It's terrific.
At the Sun, and that's exactly, it's about redlining and that kind of thing throughout the history of that here in Baltimore. And Barbara emails, I was on a committee a few years ago in Rogers Forge across from Stoneley that went through all the deeds to remove restrictive language, so we accomplished this for our community. So there are communities doing this kind of one at a time. With 527 homes to get this taken care of, Bissett, where do you stand? How many of them have you been able to clean up so far?
According to John's reporting, they're at 75%. I think they're getting, they might have gotten some more back. I've been following it, even though I don't live in the neighborhood anymore. I follow the news in the neighborhood, yeah. And they're still working to get 100%. Yeah. Dischargement of that language.
Well, bravo to all you guys. And we got, that's all the time we have. But that's Bissett Schwanke. She's a real estate agent with Cummings & Company, and John Morgan, a freelance journalist who's written about racist covenants in Baltimore County for our news partner, The Baltimore Banner. And up next, the Baltimore writer and cultural critic Lawrence Burney joins me to talk about his first book, a collection of essays called No Sense in Wishing. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.